We've been looking at the qualities of Ahlul Jannah, and we started to embark upon the communication they have with their Rabb. In particular, the voice of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala through the Qur'an. We focused on ayah 201 of Surah Al-Baqarah, where Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, وَمِنْهُمْ مَنْ يَقُولُ رَبَّنَا عَاتِنَا فِي الدُّنْيَا حَسَنَةً وَفِي الْآخِرَةِ حَسَنَةً وَقِنَا عَذَابَ النَّارِ. And from them there are those who say, Our Rabb, give us good in this world and good in the hereafter, and save us from the punishment of the fire. We started off with the Qur'an, looking at it as a journey for the human being, from Surah Al-Fatiha to Surah Al-Ikhlas, and then the two Ma'awwidhatayn of Falak and Nas. And we've looked at the first two ayat, or rather the first three ayat of Surah Al-Fatiha. We've looked at Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, Ar-Rahmanir Rahim. Well, today we will look at the third or the fourth ayah, which is Maliki Yawmiddin. The ayah can be recited in two ways actually, either Maliki Yawmiddin or Maliki Yawmiddin. See, Malik means king and it's indicative of a political relation, while Malik means owner, indicating an economic relationship. Where the human being has an ownership relation with a thing, it is such that he may profit from the benefit of that thing. And where a man is said to be king, it means that he has power over and above others and accords himself the right of supervision and decision. Yet neither of these situations has an objective existence. See, both are simple arrangements. When you say that someone is the owner of a house, it simply means that this arrangement is recognized in the present circumstance. If you say that such a person is the king of a certain area, then that too is no more than a subjective arrangement, because both cases immediately lose their effect when the defining conditions are changed. So at that level, both words have different meanings. The king does one set of things, while the owner does another set of things. In the case of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the creator of the whole of existence and in power over the whole of existence, the unity of ownership and sovereignty is clear, because the possessor and the possessed is real and objective. See, so in essence, it is one who is free by virtue of his own merits and characteristics from depending on anything in existence, while everything in existence depends over him. In Surah Al-Mu'min, that is Surah number 40, Ayah 16, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Limanil mulkul yawm, to whom belongs the kingdom this day? Lillahi al-wahid al-qahhar, to Allah, the one who subdues them all. In Surah Al-Imran, in Ayat al-Mulk, a very famous ayah says, قُلِ اللَّهُمَّ مَالِكَ الْمُلْكِ. Say, O Muhammad, say, O Allah, the owner of the dominion. Now, because it says مَالِكَ يَوْمِ الدِّينِ, does it mean that Allah is the owner and sovereign only on the day of resurrection? No, we've got to understand that He is the real owner and sovereign both in the world and in the hereafter. And see, because in the world, we don't have the eyes for reality, because we construct relative and normative ties of ownership and sovereignty. We see ourselves and others as owners of things and as sort of sovereigns over them. But if we lift the veils, we see the world with reality and note that the real owner and sovereign of everything in existence is and always has been Allah. In Surah Al-Qaf, this is Surah number 50, if you look at Ayah 22, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala makes an amazing statement. He says, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, لَقَدْ كُنْتَ فِي غَفْلَةٍ مِّنْ هَذَا فَقَشَفْنَا عَنْكَ غِطَاءَكَ فَبَصَرُكَ الْيَوْمَ حَدِيدٌ. Certainly we were heedless of it, but now we have removed from you your veil, so your sight is sharp. In other words, your blinkers have been removed, so you can see it. Ja'far ibn Abdullah al-Ansari reports from Abu Ja'far al-Islam that this ayah says, the affair on that day and that day itself is Allah. O Jabir, when it is the day of resurrection, all dominion will perish and no ruler will remain save Allah. So when we're reading this ayah, Maliki yawmiddin, immediately what should flash before my eyes is my life, because it will be presented towards me. And will I be able to accept it and say, yes, I tried my best in every situation? In essence, that's the crux of it. There will be no excuses, there will be no delusions, nothing. It will be reality in itself. All I need to know is that if I look back at my life, can I justify each of the actions? If I can't, have I put them right and said, I have done my best with this? That's all that is required of me. Let's look at the next ayah now, and we'll take the first bit. إِيَّكَ نَعْبُدُ. You and you alone do we do the ibadah of. Or maybe translated, as you may see it in your Qur'an, from the translation of the Qur'an, it says, you do we worship. This actually brings the concept of Tawheed. In essence, every single Islamic subject, from those related to belief, through those related to akhlaq and self-purification, to those related to divine injunctions and daily deeds, all of them are on a single concept, and that is Tawheed. The whole principle of Islam is based upon this, on the principle of Tawheed. And we need to understand a little bit about theoretical Tawheed and practical of Tawheed. The principle of Tawheed in Islam is of two types. You have Nazari, which is theoretical Tawheed, and you have Amali, which is practical Tawheed. Theoretical Tawheed is related to knowledge and understanding. And here it means to know Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala as one. Practical Tawheed, Amali Tawheed, is related to personal integrity, of shaping with one's action a unity and a single direction in the direction of the One, in the limitless One. So, in other words, if theoretical Tawheed means to recognize the oneness of Allah, then practical Tawheed means the human being becoming in himself or herself a single unified entity. Very simply, to be absolutely sure that I am balanced, my intention and my action are on one plane. See, when we started Surah Al-Fatiha up to this point, everything was related to theoretical Tawheed. But now, from this point onwards, when we say إِيَّكَ نَعْبُدُ, it is a clarification of practical Tawheed. It is here that you find the magnificence of the Surah. We find the miracle of the Surah. It's so beautiful. When we looked at the phrases from the beginning, for example, Maliki Yawm al-Din, we had Rahman al-Rahim, Rabbul Alameen. These are all the divine sciences are contained in these few words. Calling Allah by these attributes, for example in Salah, is in reality a form of displaying and reviewing our knowledge of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, with each name or attribute performing the role of a subject heading. That was getting to know, understanding Him. But as soon as we say إِيَّكَ نَعْبُدُ, we begin to speak of the field of practical Tawheed, and the aim is to express the process of becoming an integrated whole. See, let's look at the word ibadah first. In Arabic, when something is totally tame and submissive, with no opposition, no resistance, then the condition is said to be ta'abbud, which is worshipful. Let me give an example. Today, when roads are constructed, you know, normal roads, they're constructed with machinery, and it's only when they're fully completed that they're open for passage. In the past, though, roads were constructed as you went along, and if there was a hindrance of rocks and thorns or whatever, these would be removed as you went along. if there was a road which was smooth and even with no hindrance, the Arabs would call it Tariq al-Mu'abbad, a worshipful road. Therefore, a Mu'abbad person is one who is smooth and obedient, no trace of resistance or rebellion towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And it's a condition that you can only have with respect to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. To be an abd of Allah means to have this condition, not only with in respect to Allah and His commands, but so that the principle of Tawheed is being able to follow the order of none other than Him. So when we say Iyyaka na'budu, it means total submission to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It means being able to remove any form of partnership, any sideways thinking. In Surah Al-Furqan, that is Surah number 25, Ayah 43, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, Ara'aita man ittakhadha ilahahu hawa. Have you seen him who takes his low desires for his God? أَفَأَنْتَ تَقُونُ عَلَيْهِ وَكِيلًا. Will you then be a protector over him? The most obvious of shirk or associating with Allah is our desires. Rumi says in his Mathnawi, the mother of idols is the idol of your sight, your nafs. Those idols are snakes, the idol a dragon. The soul is iron and stone, an idol but a spark. Such sparks are soon by water quenched. But when have iron and stone been stilled by water? A man with these two, how can he ever find peace? Thus when we say, Iyyaka na'budu, you alone do we worship, we deny all worship of other than Allah. We're claiming that we're obedient to the command of Allah rather than the command of our desires, our appetites, and our lusts. It also means that we refuse to give ourselves to any kind of servitude, abjection, or compelled obedience or exploitation, and we resist the annulment of our right to choice and freedom. So, if we look at this, it's amazing that in a few short lines, theoretical Tawheed is explained in the most profound way, while practical Tawheed is manifested in one short phrase, which is Iyyaka na'budu. Let's now look at the word Iyyaka. The experts in Arabic grammar tell us that the grammar of this sentence, or the grammar of this word, tells us that there is the effect of restriction, which is hisr. Because normally you would say na'buduka, we worship you. In this phrase, the verb na'budu is preceded by the pronoun which should normally come after, and therefore the restriction of you alone do we worship. And in essence, it then reiterates the phrase of Tawheed when we all say, La ilaha illallah, there is no God but Allah. In Ayatul Kursi we say, La ikraha fi din. قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ الرُّشْدُ مِنَ الْغَيْفِ وَمَنْ يَقْفَرْ بِالتَّعْفُوتِ وَيُؤْمِنْ بِاللَّهِ فَقَدْ إِسْتَمْسَكَ بِالْأَرْوَةِ الْوُثْقَى. There is no compulsion in religion, because the right way has become clear from the error, and whoever disbelieves in false gods and believes in Allah has definitely held on to the firmest handle. So the restriction is also telling me that if one, besides submitting to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, in order to strengthen one's iman, we must continually stand against the manifestation of the false gods. And finally, the plural pronoun. Remember, here it says we worship instead of I worship. It doesn't say iyyaka a'budu, it says iyyaka na'budu. And the concern is with the construction of the human being. Just as the human being is constructed within the radiance of the knowledge of Allah and attention towards Him, so too is the human constructed in the context of social activities and in cooperation with a society of Tawheed, rather than alone and in isolation. Because we are thinking, divinely orientated, active social beings, then we will only progress in a society a human being who is cognizant of Allah both in thought and in action, but who is cut off from society, a society of tawheed, is deficient. And thus, if we look at now, إِيَّاكَ نَعْبُدُ, it means, Ya Allah, we, the society of those who believe in tawheed, are moving together in unison towards you, and together we accept only your command.